Hello and welcome to another edition of Editing Aloud. And before we start a panel discussion, we have a special correspondent in Cape Town listening to Marcus Huster explain what happened to all the money that Steinhoff lost. Rob Rose is down there for us. And Rob, apparently Marcus has told the parliamentary committee hearing him that he knows nothing about anything.
Yeah, it's actually interesting. He's basically told people that Deloitte, essentially, is an external auditor, asked for a forensic investigation, which he thought would delay the results coming out, and so he decided to resign, which is completely contradictory to our understanding of how it actually happened. He says there were no accounting irregularities that he knew about, and specifically he was asked about a text message he sent to his friends apologizing for the mistakes, and he said his only mistake was to get into bed with a partner in 2007 called Andreas Seifert in Austria, and that's ultimately what sank him. He was just the wrong guy, according to Marcus. And this person, Andreas Seifert, he eventually laid the charges in Germany, which led to a lot of what happened. So it's a fantastic display of obfuscation.
Yeah. And panel, please do feel free to. I'm basically waiting for Rob Rose's book on Steinhoff to come out so that I fully understand what the story is about. I know there was a lot of money lost, and it's unexplained, but have you heard anything in this morning's testimony, Sikonati, that's impressed you?
Yes, he's said everything that we expected him to say, right. And that is absolutely nothing.
So he denied everything?
Yes.
Yeah.
He didn't know and he didn't see any fraud there. Actually, the company's code of conduct specifically says no employees should commit any fraud against the company, and he stuck to it.
Yeah, Rob, I know you're writing a book about Steinhoff and this saga. Has he said anything that would change what you've already written?
I mean, I think people expected Marcus Huster to say what he's saying, which is that there was nothing that he did wrong, and essentially any mistakes were other people's fault.
Right.
So I think that's consistent with that. I mean, certainly what he's done is, you know, last week in Parliament, Ben Lafondi, who was the chief financial officer, basically said that there were these fake buying groups that Marcus Huster cooked up. So he was asked about these fake buying groups, and he said, no, they did exist. They were audited, this sort of thing. So the panel didn't tackle him on the specifics of various frauds, like these off-balance sheet companies and that sort of thing. But to some extent, what you need for this to be really useful is to have Christo Visser and to have the other members of the board there to say, well, you know, Marcus, that isn't true. This is what happened. The guys don't know enough.
Do the MPs questioning him sound as if they know what they're talking about?
To some extent, they're trying to extract some sort of accountability, some sense of responsibility for what happened, but you're not going to get that from Marcus Huster at this stage.
Yeah, it's a political interrogation rather than a financial one, I presume.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think Yunus Karim said that he's trying to make himself look like Mother Teresa in the process. But that just doesn't wash for a lot of people. They can't. The parliamentarians can't quite put their finger on it, but I don't think it really washes with them.
Yeah. All right, listen, we're going to let you go. Get on to listen to the rest of the testimony. It's your life. I think it's your final chapter. right. Panel, the other range of dreadful things again have happened, or interesting things in South Africa, but we are formally again in recession. I don't know why people call it a technical recession. I mean, if your heart stops beating, you're technically dead, and you're dead. You know what I mean? You are in recession. How do we get out of it? Luke, what happens now?
What happens now?
Yeah.
Well, it's like, I don't know. Like, I mean, if I knew, I'd be working for Cyril now, because he'd be calling me and asking me. I mean, it's quite a shocker. Like, you know, it's bigger than we expected, for one thing. What's being lost there is that the first quarter was actually reversed even lower. So it's 2.2 or 2.6, and then plus 0.7.
Yeah.
So we will barely have positive growth this year. I mean, not good news going into an election next year. I mean, there was so much hope only just 6 months ago that we were about to turn the corner.
And Cyril Yana is in China at the moment. I think, is he in China all week, or does he come back sometime during the week to face?
I'm not sure, but does it make a difference?
But I was wondering what you thought. I mean, once again, the Chinese seem to have taken to Cyril quite a lot. Yeah. I mean, he's their guy. JZ is Putin's guy, basically. And I just wonder whether he can possibly come back from China with anything that would alleviate the gloom.
I think the silence has been quite deafening from government and from the ruling party. It seems like simply that there is no plan. We've had Nhlanhla Nene speaking yesterday from China. He was on Bloomberg this morning, really not inspiring confidence, basically saying, oh, just wait and see, you know, in the mini budget in October, we'll come up with this plan and this promised stimulus
package. They want people to wait until the mini budget in October.
Yes, because then they're going to, you know, put their plans on the table. And I'm afraid that's way too little too late. I think we need some serious...
Well, that's more than a month away, Ron Darby. Yeah. I mean, something's got to happen surely, immediately. I mean, not only are we in recession, but for the first time, we're now subsidizing the price of petrol.
Yeah.
And once you go down that road, when do you lift the subsidy?
I mean, the only thing you can come back with... China across the continent has been doing all its infrastructure projects. In South Africa, nothing, right? There's nothing significantly a big project that they've undertaken in South Africa. So if Ramaphosa comes back next week or mini budget and they say, look, Chinese are about to drop some odd billions of US dollars into South Africa on some infrastructure project, that'll be the first time in yonks that, and that could be some stimulus throw at us that might excite a bit more. But I think South Africa's in a position where we need some of that energy, some beyond just the confidence of Ramaphosa as our new president, is better. Someone putting actual money in the ground and say China is going to look at our, I don't know.
But way the Chinese do that, let's assume they are going to build infrastructure. Yeah. I mean, they're going to build, I heard one of the things they were going to build is the dam on the Umzumvuba River, which runs into Port St. John's, right? So buried far away in deepest Transkei, you can't see it. It's not a, you know, it's not going to be a, I mean, there'll be obviously lots of photographs of it on television, and God knows that the SABC covers it. But the kind of projects that they do don't necessarily grow the economy. They might leave you with a big airport or a new railway station or indeed a new railway line. But built using their own workers normally, whether things are different in South Africa. I mean, what we want surely is more than that.
Peter, it's not a lack of money to build the infrastructure that is the problem. It's a lack of vision. It's a lack of a plan. I repeat again, it's not a shortage of money.
Yeah.
There's money everywhere. You just have to say, guys, this is what we are going to build. We are going to build 20,000 kilometers of road. Our friends in China can invest in this. We go borrow money everywhere. There is not, we are drifting aimlessly.
Because there's no plan.
There's no plan.
Yeah.
I see Ron Darby does not believe me. He's shaking his head. He can tell me what the plan is.
Well,
I'd love to know.
In a way, there is a plan, because it's Jacob Zuma's. It was in his last State of the Nation address, or last two or three. They're the same.
A million job opportunities.
Well, whatever that. No, but there were these projects that he was talking about. A corridor here and a dam there.
Yes.
And
it's quite interesting that you can't remember any of them.
Yes, no, I do remember the dam. Remember the dam on the Umzumvuba River.
Which tells you how much of a priority they are.
China doesn't build infrastructure like they used to. Like that whole idea of they're bringing their own workers. I mean, China has been sensitive to the issue that the criticism that they come with their own workers.
Okay.
Last night I was having a conversation
so
with someone.
Happen.
And even bringing their own prostitutes from China, actually, to for their own workers.
Yeah.
That is like no longer.
They did build the Ingula. They did build the. They did build.
Exactly. Yeah.
For Eskom, they did build the Ingula dam pumping project with their own people.
And a lot of part. Things that, like, when you talk about China liking Ramaphosa versus Zuma liking Russia, there's a point where Chinese didn't want to deal with Zuma at all. They didn't trust him.
Yeah.
But Zuma came with, oh, no, speak to that person, and the Chinese pulled back from
that. I think
that,
there's a really special relationship with Ramaphosa.
Yeah, a special relationship. Yeah. And he always spoke about SOEs and how he wants to run them, like, on a Chinese model. So if he comes back, honestly, the Chinese are saying, they're going to do this. But the economy needs, we need that level of confidence.
I agree with you totally. You are talking to my point when you're talking about the Chinese. There is money there.
Yeah.
To do what with it? That's what Ramaphosa and South Africa needs to answer. Mm. The Chinese have got all the money we need.
Mm.
What is it that we want to do?
Infrastructure, right?
Which infrastructure?
It's renewables. It's all the this type of spend needs to come into the economy. The last time the SA economy was growing near 5% was when we were on this hype of Infrastructure Drive, 2008.
I agree. Yeah, so I'm saying my question is, what is the plan? Well, what is it that we need to
problem,
build?
The problem, surely, Luke and Jan are sitting there, I'm sorry, is that although we all might want more new renewables and roads and railway corridors, I think it's called the Maputo Corridor. There you go. and the
Maputo
dam on
Corridor
the
was built in 1996 by Matthew Posa, connecting Mozambique all the way through the Kalahari into Botswana. That was built. Now, I'm looking for this vision. What is it that we want to do with the money that the Chinese have?
No, exactly. So, but there's another problem is that even if we give them a vision and they're all the roads that we want built, and my earpiece is falling out. And the problem still is Eskom is broke. No matter how much new sources of power we make, can they help us fix Eskom? Can they help us? Please, can they buy SAA? Can they do the really hard bits that we're in trouble
at
with?
A price that can be done all of that? So our government has to agree to sell equity in Eskom.
Yeah.
Surely the Chinese would pay good money for it if they can be assured of the
Well, they own 20% of Standard Bank. Why not own 20% of South African Airways and put some management in there?
The issue here is, Peter, there is no plan. The money is there. There's just no plan.
Maybe Cyril Ramaphosa will have come back from China because he's been there now for a long time. Maybe he'll come back with a plan.
As Yana was saying,
he has a plan, Sekunati. He doesn't control his party at the moment, right? So as much as we're calling, hey, where's the plan?
But I mean, how hard can it be to sell a infrastructure project to the party?
I think that's the hard sell, what it actually means. What was interesting about Eskom, for a while they were talking about this converting debt to equity, and there was like, we might have to go that way. And now they say the app model is not where we want to go. So maybe that...
Nobody wants equity in
it. Don't it in. No. Maybe that's a sign with Chinese extra investment. But we need that investment narrative in the SA economy right now, where we are.
Yes.
We need that confidence. Someone's putting actual money in the ground.
Someone needs to say, guys, over the next 5 years, we are going to build this Mzimvubu dam we've been talking about forever.
Mm. It'll salt
build
up in a week.
It'll salt up in a week. There needs to be a plan. If you want, Cyril Ramaphosa has been saying he wants 1.3 trillion rand. What he has not said is to do what with it. That is the problem.
Yeah.
Now, as Yana said earlier, Tlantanene says trust the government's plan. He did not once say what the government plan is.
Here
is the problem.
Okay.
It's leadership.
Despite
it. We have not a clue what we want to do.
I mean, the thing.
Well, he may have a clue, but he hasn't told us.
I think the thing.
There's a great reason he hasn't told us.
Yeah.
I think the point you need to get is we need to get this growth number right. I mean, if you're a foreign investor and you're going to put money in, you don't go and put money in an economy that's shrinking, where companies are losing money.
Yeah.
So basically, you need the. It's not like a case of the foreigners coming in to give you money to give you growth. You actually generate the growth, and the foreigners come in to try and benefit from that growth.
But normally you generate growth in your own economy through your own people.
Yeah, exactly.
So we don't have enough people with any money to buy anything.
Exactly. Why would you come here when you can go somewhere else that's growing 6% and our economy is shrinking?
Any plan can be funded. That is when the Chinese will come in. When you say, guys, build that port and that pipeline, we shall pay you. Build, own and operate it. That's a plan. We don't have it.
Okay, and we'll be back right after this break. Welcome back. So, we're in recession, there's this kind of dark cloud hanging over land. We now know that President Ramaphosa is going to pursue the expropriation of land without compensation, that he wants to make the constitution more specific on the matter. But in the absence of knowing quite what sort of words he's going to use, it's impossible for anybody, surely, to even plant a tree on a farm without knowing for sure whether that farm will be around and for you to harvest the tree in 10 years' time. Somebody was telling me the other day, I mean, an apple farmer, quite a big apple farmer, needs to plant 2,000 hectares of trees. It's going to cost him 6 million rand just to plant the trees, and then another 6 to 10 to keep them, you know, to grow them. Why should he do that and employ the people who need to do that and buy the seed, et cetera, et cetera, the whole value chain, in an atmosphere in which he doesn't know what the hell is going on?
I suppose in some ways that this is a bit of a false debate, because it's not like this is a new policy. It's not like there was ever, there was a law last week that said you can't have expropriation without compensation. Now you can. In theory, that's been available, that tool, to the government since 1994. So I don't see how that actually changed.
You mean you're interpreting the Constitution as it would allow it, yeah?
So it doesn't look like it's, sometimes we have this debate as if there's a new policy. But I think... But the issue, it's been totally mismanaged, I completely agree, and it's complicated things, and it's had confidence. But I'm not sure whether it follows from that this is actually then a new policy. I think that's where the big failure has been.
It just seems, may not be a new policy, but it's a new environment. It just seems a new sort of sense. Zoom is gone, okay, and then along came Cyril. We knew about the expropriation without compensation because that's what the party conference instructed him to do. And he's accepted that, and he's going to do it as well as he can. But surely he's got to tell us what the change is going to be, Jana. I mean, what do you do, you know?
No, I think it's been creating a lot of uncertainty. Yeah. When you look at agricultural output numbers, I think it was down 27% or something.
So it was one of the biggest contributors to the second quarter fall, is that right?
Yeah. Yes. I mean, that and household consumption, that's obviously the big driver of GDP. Yeah. But I mean, I think... You know, the problem is that the feeling is that it undermines all property rights, and until that point where we have certainty, you cannot blame an apple farmer that is not putting 6 million rand worth of trees into the ground. It would be a stupid decision to do that until you actually have certainty. And I think that's, you know, a lot of investors are just going to wait and see how this thing plays out until it's it's finalized. So, I mean, personally, if I had the money lying around, I would not be investing it in South Africa either. And, you know, from a foreign investor perspective, with a rand at 20 rand to the pound, it's a very cheap country to be investing in at the moment if you were seeing opportunities here.
Yeah. Ron, what would you give him? What advice would you give him?
You know, when you open up the thing that, like, the ANC is okay with amending the constitution, it took about two odd months, and he came up and he said, listen, we're going forward with this thing.
Yeah.
I think, you know, the Zondo Commission and all these commissions now should be strengthening his political standing within his party right now. Because you see all the muck coming out about the Zuma administration, and it's quite embarrassing every day, like constantly. I think he should use this opportunity now to come forward and give us a solid... I'm pretty sure he has an idea of where they want on this. And come out and lead right now. Almost the space is there for him to come out and say, this is what we're looking for in appropriation. Yeah. I was thinking something about our SOEs and how much land they own. If I'm sitting there, I'm like, that's the land you should be targeting, right? The SOE land, and that's all peri-urban land. And if it goes aggressively along those rights, then already you're given security. So I think he has a plan. Maybe he's thinking of next year's elections or so on. But I think he must bring it to a full stop now. Like he would, and I think the Zondo Commission, you can't wait any further. Just put the full stop there.
The midterm budget policy statement isn't. Mm. Going to do it, is it, Sikonati? I mean, you can't wait. It's 6 weeks away.
Peter, that will be a very big non-event if we sit and wait for that. But let's just observe the lessons from other countries. On the 22nd of August, Venezuela limited ATM cash withdrawals to the equivalent of 17 U.S. cents.
17 U.S. cents.
Yes, not $17, 17 cents.
Yeah.
You can go to your ATM in Venezuela and bring your wheelbarrow and withdraw 17 cents and put it in the wheelbarrow, not in a wallet.
Mm.
This is exactly 11 years after Venezuela expropriated the first farm without compensation.
Mm.
11 years to the day. That was followed immediately by other private property that was expropriated. Now, in South Africa,
was there a point in that process in Venezuela when they did, apart from the first expropriation, when they did a really bad thing, like did they take an oil field away from a company?
That was my next step.
Yeah.
2 months after they expropriated that farm and many others, they went and took two oil rigs in the I'm forgetting the name of the thing, it's called the Conoco Belt, from ConocoPhillips. Two oil rigs,
right.
They nationalized them,
and
ConocoPhillips left together with another British company, and a British producer of meat that owned a farm 200,000 hectares. They took that without compensation. That was a chap by the name of Chavez, Hugo Chavez, and our own Julius Malema paid him a visit and said, you guys are doing very well. This is what South Africa should be learning from. Now he's come back and he's implementing this, and Ramaphosa is following.
He's not following.
Ramaphosa is
Sikunati,
really just
Sikunati, can I come with this? No, he's not following.
I will finish the
Venezuela model.
Let him finish and you can come back.
I will finish.
Okay.
Julius Malema is driving Ramaphosa to do exactly what Hugo Chavez did. Because Julius admired this, and whatever the ANC is doing now, this expropriation without compensation, they're trying to stay two steps ahead of the EFF.
Yeah, okay, so like Ron, I don't believe that bit.
Yeah.
I don't think he's been driven by the EFF.
But is expropriation without compensation. Let's stick to that.
Let's stick
11
let's
years
stick
ago,
to that.
Venezuela did exactly the same thing and took all other property.
So Ron, the question is, what is Cyril's version of what Chavez did? How does Cyril's version turn out?
I mean, when Malema was running with the expropriation ticket in the EFF before ANC took ownership of it, before Ramaphosa took ownership of it, perhaps that was the model we were talking about. But then when Ramaphosa and ANC took ownership of it, and they said we're reviewing the constitution, it's almost making parameters on what types, what when you talk about land, what properties. So they. This is the opportunity to paint a picture of where exactly we'll be targeting, and this is when they can come out there and protect productive land, agricultural land, and so on. I think that is ultimately why Ramaphosa put it in within the party. So I think, I mean, those measures are very much Malema measures. I think what he's done is just taken it in house, and we will see. I think the fear for him is when he comes and says only that land and so on, his fear is what EFF then will respond to.
Yeah.
Oh, the water down.
Presumably, look, there might be a form of words. Just imagine if you were extremely sort of Machiavellian and you had adopted this approach, you'd come out and said, yeah, we're actually going to do it. And then you adopt a form of words that the EFF can't support. And so you can't get the majority that you need to pass to change the constitution. And then it's all over, because you've got it. You've got support from your NEC. They can't change their minds because the EFF doesn't like the story. The EFF wants to nationalise all land. The ANC doesn't. Mm. Even there might be a problem. I mean, is it possible that Cyril can think up a form of words to change this constitution that the EFF cannot support?
I mean, I don't think he probably has to think that hard. I mean, chances are the EFF, being that sort of into the grandstanding, they'll want their own words. No, so that. It's not really hard to imagine that whatever he says, that it won't be good enough for them. Because
so there'll be no change in the constitution.
They'll want to be seen to be driving the thing, and they won't want to be seen taking Cyril's words. They'd actually want Cyril to take their words.
Yeah.
So I find it quite likely that maybe it doesn't happen. Maybe there isn't a majority vote in Parliament in the end, whatever the words.
We would have gone through all of this for nothing in a way.
Yeah.
Just talk to me. Sorry, just a quick thing on petrol. So petrol price should have gone up X, and it's gone up X minus, or going up X minus, because of a subsidy. How does the subsidy work? Who knows that? Who knows the background to the story?
The technicalities I struggle with. You know how they work it out under recovery, recovery. So basically, what it means. So prices should have gone up this time by a set amount because of under recoveries.
Yeah.
So they're paying this gamble then that at some point in the future that the process will be reversed. So instead of prices say going down by 30 cents, then maybe they'll go down by 2 cents in order to make up whatever the actual numbers are.
I mean, fuel subsidies are a nightmare in countries. Yeah. Nigeria is the millstone around every Nigerian president's neck. Is it not?
The word subsidy is exactly what it is. So they will find the money wherever to plug the gap.
Yeah.
The 5 cents that Jeff Hadebe has allowed the price to increase goes straight to pay for the salary increases of the workers, because at the petrol stations, because it increases the retail margin. Yeah. for the workers. Again, it's them now doing everything with 2019 in mind. Let's subsidize the people, and we'll worry about it later.
This is also the, what has been very impressive in the last couple of days has been the testimony we've been hearing at the SARS Commission. This is not Judge Zondo's commission. This is oh my goodness me, I've forgotten.
Judge Nugent.
That's right. So we have the head of Bain testifying to Judge Nugent. And he apologizes, and they made a real mess of SARS, and we didn't know what we were doing. It is possible to deceive somebody if you are in power into doing something that may look normal on paper, but is in fact a nefarious, would have a nefarious end. We also hear that the head of Bain, Vittorio Mazzoni, met Jacob Zuma quite a long time before Tom Mayani was appointed at SARS, all of which sounds really ugly, and good luck to Bain. But it's also a good it's a good thing, isn't it, that all these companies are coming, and shouldn't everybody's got a Gupta story? They should all put their hands up and just go and tell them.
No, I agree. I mean, it's a pity that our political editor Natasha Marin is not here, who's been leading on this story.
Yeah,
it's been quite a fascinating story. I mean, for one of the revelations is that Mr. Mazzoni, he actually met Tom Moyane about a year before he was appointed.
Yeah,
I mean, to think about it,
and
I mean, the idea,
presentation on SARS.
I mean, the idea that these people,
to the
before you and I, in voters, taxpayers, had any idea, they knew a year in advance.
Yeah.
I mean, this is, like, I don't know but whether they knew. It's a possibility.
My point is, isn't the humiliation of Vittorio Mazzoni, it's the fact that he, having done it now, he's kind of liberated himself and Bain. I mean, okay, they might not get government business again or whatever it might be, but there's so many people with these stories to tell. And how do we make it possible for them to go and tell it to Robert Nugent or to Raymond Zondo without them being humiliated? Look, this is what I did. I'm sorry. This is what happened.
I think the point should be made that he didn't actually tell the judge that he went to see Zuma and Moyane at Nkandla more than a year before Moyane became SARS
Somebody signed up.
It came out as if I'm correct.
Yeah.
In fact, he didn't say very much at all other than I'm sorry at the commission. And I think they were quite surprised to see the level of information that, you know, that they had and the detailed questioning. They were not prepared for that.
And did they answer those questions?
I don't know if they're not in much detail. I mean, it's really been more apologies than answers, to be honest.
I mean, on the meetings, I think maybe we should make it clear that we don't actually know definitely for sure, but we have good sources, and they haven't actually denied it yet, but they haven't actually confirmed it either.
Well,
so we should
keep up the good work. We've got to go. Thank you very much for joining us, and we'll see you again next week.